Good evening. I'm Heather Brown, and this is Between the Covers. Toronto author Terence Green is regarded as a science fiction writer. His most recent novel, Shadow of Ashland, appears to be a contemporary story of a man's search for his long-lost uncle, but mysterious elements creep into the telling. Leo Nolan's Uncle Jack left Depression-era Toronto 50 years earlier, seeking work in the U.S., and disappeared without a trace. But suddenly, letters from him start arriving, letters postmarked 1934. Leo decides to visit Jack's last known address, the Scott Hotel in Ashland, Kentucky. There, he checks into Jack's old room and discovers the elderly hotel owners remember Jack well. Here's Michael Hogan with Episode 3 of Shadow of Ashland.
When I woke, I was sweating. I'd fallen asleep on a hot August afternoon in a room with air as still as its furnishings. I checked my watch. 4:40 p.m. I pushed myself to a sitting position, groggy and with a slight headache, and stared at the closed window. I got up and opened it. The warmth that greeted me was as stifling as that within, but differed in that it was alive, smelling like a city, fragments of oil, pavement, and steel. I leaned forward on the ledge and looked out at Jack's world. At an angle across the street was a church turret. To my right, a bit farther away, was what appeared to be a large bank or trust company. When I peered farther left, I could see a theater marquee that read, Paramount. I stood back, assured by the ordinariness of it all. The only sound in the room was the ticking of the bedside clock that I had wound earlier. It read 1 o'clock. I had slept for an hour. Picking it up, I adjusted it to read 4:40, uncomfortable at yet another blatant specter of differing timelines. It was something small, but it was something that I could control and understand. 20 minutes later, I stood on the corner of Winchester and 14th, letting the late afternoon sun beat down on me. The church turret that I had seen from my room belonged to the Calvary Episcopal Church, an elegant Gothic structure. The bank was the first bank and trust company, commercial dignity with financial stability. In no hurry, I began to walk. F.W. Woolworth Company. My ambling had brought me to a point across the street from the store. I was curious. I crossed the street and went inside. If the store didn't date back to the 30s, then it was in its own time warp. Large fans hung from the high ceiling, stirring the heat lethargically. The fluorescent lights in rows about them hummed like insects. As I strode forward, the long slats of the hardwood floor creaked with age. As in most Woolworth stores that I could remember, there was a restaurant area, consisting of a long counter and swiveling red and chrome chairs. There were only two customers there. The waitress was sitting on the end seat reading a magazine. After I sat down, she glanced up at me, then returned to her magazine, giving me time to read the wall signs behind the counter that served as a menu. Liver and onions, vegetable and potato, coffee or small soda, $2.99. Grilled chopped steak with fried onions, $3.49. Freshly grilled hamburger platter, $2.79. Clubhouse sandwich with fries, coffee or small soda, $3.79. Assorted pies, 99 cents. Baked fresh daily muffins, 50 cents. The waitress, 30-ish and pleasant, approached. Can I help you? Her pencil hovered over the yellow receipt pad. I nodded toward the signs. What do you recommend? She smiled. To eat? For dinner? I smiled back. Someplace else, she said, with a small laugh. A half laugh of my own. You could be right. She was appraising me. You're not from around here, are you? I shook my head. Just visiting. Well, she drew the word out, thinking, if you like liver and onions, that's what I'd get. Lots of folks don't like them, though. I like them. That's my recommendation, then, she smiled. First time in 6 years I've been asked for my opinion. Just goes to show, if you live long enough, anything can happen, I finished. But seldom does. She grinned and moved down the counter to the stove. We close at 6, she said, removing my plate, or I'd recommend any of our pies. I glanced at the clock atop the dinette sign behind her. Then I took note of her name tag. Thanks very much, Jean. I drained the coffee and put 4 $1 bills on the counter. Next time. You bet, she smiled. I felt her eyes on me as I left, friendly, curious, just like I was trying to be about Ashland. When I woke the next morning, I lay in bed for a while, staring at the ceiling. I folded my hands behind my head, stretched in the clean sheets. A new day, I thought. I sat down on the red and chrome swivel chair and looked down the counter. Jean glanced up from her magazine and met my eyes. A small half-smile was slow in coming. Flipping the magazine over to save her place, she sauntered toward me, pencil poised over her receipt book. Can't believe you're back. Must be a creature of habit, she shrugged. So what'll it be? I'd been studying the signs. Says you got an all-you-can-eat breakfast for $3.49 until 1 p.m., she smiled. Can be quite a bargain, you know how to do it. How should I do it? Don't touch the pancakes. I waited for more. Or the sausages. What does that leave? Bacon, eggs, toast, juice, coffee. Nothing much we can do to them. You'd be safe. How many do I get? Like it says, how many you want? Why don't you load up a plate for me? You decide. You look like you could use some filling up. She stood back, appraised me. I'll go easy on the cholesterol, though. You got a good eye. And I got 2 of them, she said, watching me with one of them as she scrawled on her receipt pad. I'm Leo, by the way. Where are you from, Leo? Toronto, Canada. Gee, so you come all the way from Canada to eat at Woolworths in Ashland. You escaped from a mental institution or something? I chuckled. I'm on vacation. So this is the big trip, is it? A fake whistle. I don't know about you, Leo. You got your day pass on you? She was funny. I checked her finger. No ring. When I looked back at her face, she was smiling at me. Coffee? She asked. I nodded, smiled. Later that day, I dialed the phone. In Toronto, my father answered. Mail brought another one. I was beyond surprise. I had almost expected it. Read it to me. He cleared his throat. It's dated August 21st, 1934. Mom's birthday. That's right. Dear Margaret, this will reach you after your birthday, so I apologize for that. But as you can see, I didn't really forget it. I just didn't get organized. Knowing me, I'm sure you can appreciate that. So happy 25th. Where does the time go? Things are going swell for me down here. I'm making pretty good money and making some good friends, too. Maybe I'll be able to treat everyone back home soon to something nice. I'd like to have enough to send the kids something from the States for Christmas. I've been to the movies a lot here. The Paramount's almost right beside me. You'd love it. Last week I went and saw James Cagney in Public Enemy, and this week I saw I Am a Fugitive from a Chain Gang with Paul Muni. A really funny thing happened at the movies this week. You know how they get someone to come up on stage before the movie starts and draw ticket stubs for prizes? Well, they drew my ticket as one of them, and I won a free hairdo at a local beauty salon. Everybody laughed when I went up to collect the prize. I must admit, it was pretty funny, and I laughed, too. I didn't know what to do with the prize, so I gave it to the lady who owns the Scott Hotel. Write me when you get a chance, okay? Gotta go and take some pictures. You know how it is. Say hello to everyone for me. Love, Jack. About 4 o'clock, I returned to the hotel. I knocked gently on the Matusik's door. Teresa Matusik opened it. Mr. Nolan, she said. Sorry to bother you, Mrs. Matusik. Stanley went out for a walk. Emma's doing some shopping. Could I talk to you? Some hesitation. Then she shrugged. I guess so. She considered asking me in, then changed her mind. Shutting the door behind her, she led me into the parlor. I sat on the wine-colored sofa opposite her. Mrs. Matusik, if you'll forgive my directness, I'd like to ask you something. She folded her hands in her lap. It sounds kind of silly. She listened intently. Ask away. Did Jack Rady ever give you a voucher for a free hairdo in a beauty salon back in 1934? Her dark eyes became watery and her lips parted. A silence filled every crevice of the room. I could hear my heart beating. "Yes," she said quietly. My heart pounded with the rush of blood. Her face softened, a memory crystallized. "How do you know?" The letters were real then. Teresa Matusik sat across from me as perplexed as I was. "He wrote a letter to my mother," he told her. "Your mother? His sister?" "Yes." I didn't know he was writing to her. She looked down. I didn't know enough about him at all. I tilted my head. "I don't understand." "Stanley doesn't know." I was quiet. He wouldn't have liked it if he'd known I'd accepted a gift from another man. It would have undermined him. "But," she said, "I couldn't resist." A fragile smile. "Such vanity. I was just a girl. It had been years since I'd had my hair done in a beauty shop, so I accepted it. But I kept quiet about it and made Jack promise not to tell anyone around here." "I didn't know he was writing to his sister." She shook her head. From deep within her aging body, she looked out at me. "I felt real pretty afterwards. First time in quite a while," she nodded, remembering. "Real pretty." "I won't say anything." She was grateful. "Thank you." There was more she wanted to say, but it wasn't going to come. Not now. Not yet. At 6:10, I sat down at the curved counter and stared at Jean. She put her hands on her hips. "You here for the big dinner? We close in 10 minutes. It can't be done." "I know." She looked at me curiously. "I don't know anything about you, so if I'm out of line, just tell me. I'm a big boy. I can take it." I wasn't much good at this stuff. "But if you're not involved with anyone and feel so inclined, I was thinking you might join me for dinner. My treat. I'd enjoy the company." There, I'd done it. I'd learned long ago, expect nothing and you won't be disappointed. But every now and then you've got to try. Her slightly opened mouth expression was one of complete bemusement. I sat there, trying not to feel like a schoolboy. "You're a real mover, Leo from Canada," she said finally. "Been a long time since I've had a dinner date, especially with an exotic traveler." She stood back, eyeing me playfully. "Tell you what." "What?" I asked. She brushed a strand of hair from her face, tucking it behind her ear. "We'll start with coffee and talk about it. There are complications." "At least it wasn't a no." I nodded. We went to a diner half a block away and sat in a booth. She stirred some sugar into her coffee. "I don't even know your last name." "Nolan. Leo Nolan." She tapped the spoon in the cup's rim, then placed it in the saucer. "And you don't care to know what my name is?" "I care very much. I'd love to know your name." She put her tongue in her cheek and looked at the ceiling. "Right," she said. "I'm Jean Burney." I knew I'd like the name. "Just how lonely are you, Leo Nolan?" I chuckled. The woman across from me was a veteran of the male-female game, and like veterans of anything, she survived because of instincts and some kind of innate sinew. I liked survivors. "Nothing abnormal, just medium lonely, stranger in a strange land. You married?" "No, honest." I nodded. "Honest?" She thought about it. "Guys traveling, you never know. Guy your age isn't married, but likes women. Makes a woman wonder." She sipped her coffee. "Wonder what?" "What the story is." "The story," I said, "the story is that I'm not such a hot item. I was married once, back in the early 70s. I've been divorced for a long time." She pressed two fingers against her cheekbone and studied me. "Any children?" "No." "Girlfriend back home?" "Look at me. What's the hot item?" She smiled, conceited. "Since we're doing inventory, what about you?" She let several seconds lapse before finally answering. "I'm not married, but I got a kid, little boy. He's 10. You like kids?" "I think so." "Good." She formed a ring around her cup with a thumb and index finger of each hand. "'Cause if you want to eat with me tonight, you got to include him." I smiled. "It's a good deal," I said. "And I picked the spot." I must have looked as bemused as she had back in Woolworth's. "Don't worry," she said. "We got simple tastes." The sun, even after 6, was still hot as we walked. "What's your son's name?"
"Adam."
"What does he do all day in the summer while you're at work?"
"Plays with his friends."
"I hope," she added.
"Lots of baseball."
"Who looks after him?"
"My parents. That's where we're going now."
"Then, where are you staying?"
"The Scott Hotel."
"Don't know that one."
I smiled. "I'm not surprised."
She walked beside me unselfconsciously. It made me feel comfortable to be with her.
"What do you do in Toronto?"
"I work for the Toronto Star. It's a newspaper."
"Doing what?"
"Circulation manager. There are a dozen of us. We look after home and newsstand delivery for our district. Handle accounts, routes, stuff like that."
"They need 12 of you?"
"Toronto's a big city. 3 million people."
"I didn't realize."
We waited at a traffic light. "How big's Ashland?" I asked.
"About 30,000.
I thought about it.
"Could a person get lost here permanently?"
"What do you mean?"
"Could he come here and hide forever?"
"Don't know if you can do that anywhere." She looked at me. "You thinking of doing that?"
I shrugged. "No," I said. "I was thinking of someone else."
The light changed. We crossed the road.
Michael Hogan, reading from Shadow of Ashland by Terence Green. Tomorrow, Leo encounters a man with an uncanny resemblance to a young Jack Rady. I have another take on getting lost in the past, in imagination at least. In the poem Giovanna and the Beatles, music works as a kind of time machine. A woman is taken back to her youth by listening to songs that were popular then. It was written by the Italian poet Vittorio Serini, and it's read by Dennis Fitzgerald.
Giovanna and the Beatles. In the domestic muteness, in the stillness, thinking she's alone and no one's listening, she breathes life into them again. Along a streak of dust, leaving behind them splinters of sound, in a sizzle between astonished walls go the well-loved bugs. Has her moment already passed with them? Many times at the crossroads, the switches of life, a subtle devil unexpectedly reappears, a shivery infiltrator, risen from nowhere under the guise of music. A hill blazes with green again, a sea quickens, unfailing seducer till another music overcomes him. And us with him.
Dennis Fitzgerald reading Vittorio Serini's poem Giovanna and the Beatles. It's from his collection Variable Star, which was translated by Luigi Bonafini and published by Guernica Editions. And that's Between the Covers for this evening. If you'd like to contact the program, we can be reached by email at btc@vancouver.cbc.ca. Or you can write to our postal address at P.O. Box 4600, Vancouver, B.C., V6B4A2. Stay tuned now for the CBC Radio 1 News, and then it's classical music from CBC Winnipeg on Northern Lights.